Welcome to How to Talk to Kids About Anything with Dr. Robin Silverman, a podcast loaded with practical tips, powerful scripts, personal stories, and simple steps to make even the toughest conversations easier. So get ready to get the information you need to make the impact you want from someone you trust, your friend, parenting expert, Dr. Robin Silverman.
Constant question I receive from my listeners and followers is around teaching kids respect. And given that we have not that long ago come out of the holiday season and then wind up coming upon other holidays, it's not surprising that respect and more specifically manners have been on parents' minds. When kids are at home, we often let things slide, but when kids are in front of family or at schools or at activities or somewhere out in public, we often focus on the manners that we want them to showcase, holding the door for other people, being a good host, just speaking at a good volume so that people are not overloaded by what you're saying and go, it's too loud, or people feeling like they're struggling to hear what you have to say, saying please and thank you, lots more than that. As children become teens, manners become that much more important as we're really preparing them for becoming a thriving adult that does good things in the world and has really positive relationships, we hope. Interviewing well, making a good impression, advocating for yourself without bragging, watching their language, being a good friend who avoids gossiping and shows up when they're supposed to. How do we talk to kids about good manners and leaving bad manners behind? For that, we're inviting my next guest to the show, Brooke Romney. As a mom of four boys, Brooke Romney recognized that something had to change in our approach to connecting with our kids and teaching them everything they need to know before they leave the nest. In 2021, she published the first book in her 52 Modern Manners series. That was 52 Modern Manners for Today's Teens, Volume 1. With more than 100,000 copies sold, the book and the subsequent 52 Modern Manners for Today's Teens, Volume 2, and 52 Modern Manners for Kids guide parents to teach more modern and nuanced manners to their kids that will help them to find success and fulfillment in relationships, schools, work, and life. I want to welcome Brooke Romney to How to Talk to Kids About Anything.
Thanks so much, Dr. Robin. It's so fun to be here.
Well, I'm glad you're here. This is obviously a hot topic, something we've got to discuss. But before we leap into talking about manners, can you tell me what gets you up in the morning and what got you so interested in teaching modern manners to kids and teens?
Well, there was a bit of a fourfold process of why I thought this was important. The first one was I'm observing my own kids. And I'm wondering, who are their parents? What are they not learning? How come they are not presenting themselves in the world like I thought they would? Mm-hmm. And I realized that they're kind of like you said in the beginning, there was a gap between what I thought they understood and what they did understand. Mm-hmm. And so that was the first impetus. It was really my own family. How do I help them, like you said, prepare them to become successful adults? Then I'm observing other people's children and wishing that maybe some things were different in their interactions. But the thing that really got me was watching the success trajectory of the kids who got it and the opposite in the kids who didn't. And I thought, first, I want my kids to be the ones who have the opportunity at success because they understand those nuanced manners, the social norms, how to cultivate good relationships. And then the other side was, this isn't just about my kids. I care about other people's kids having the opportunity to be successful too.
Well, we appreciate it because it is something we've got to talk about. I know that some of my listeners are people who receive my character education curriculum every month, Powerful Words. And one of the hot words is always respect, and anything related to respect, respect and courtesy and kindness, and all of those things wind up kind of getting folded into what we're talking about with manners, making sure that people know, as I tell my kids, that their comfort matters too. And when we're doing kind things where that seem like, why do I really need to wipe my mouth and, you know, not say, take the potatoes from across the table and burp and whatever else. It has to do with making sure that other people also feel comfortable and understand that they matter too. But there are so many manners that children need to learn. So what would you say is the when and the how, is the best time to begin teaching kids manners?
I love that question because I started with manners for teens. Mm-hmm. And as soon as those books came out, I had a flood of parents say, we love this and we want to start it way earlier. We don't want to be playing catch up when they turn 13. And all of a sudden, at least from my experience and many parents, you give your younger kids a lot of passes as they're young and they're learning and they just don't know and they're figuring themselves out. And then something flips in your head. And by the time your kid is 13, you think, why don't you already know this? Right. You know, like you really need to step it up. And so I had a lot of parents who said, I want to start this earlier so that these are just the habits that they have. They understand how to exist in a world that is not a vacuum of their own. And so in my opinion, the earlier, the better. The kids' manners book really can start about age 4, and it's fun. It's interactive. And I think the earlier we can do it, the better. But on the opposite side, it's never too late.
You and I are really on the same page with this because my character education curriculum starts around 3 or 4 as well. And so teaching kids, for me, there's different powerful words of the month, whether it's respect or kindness or open-mindedness, discipline, you know, sportsmanship, they're all over the place. And the word respect really gets weaved into a lot of different areas of our lives. We have what we talked about, you know, at home where we're at the dinner table, or there's things that happen at school. There's things that happen on the sports field. There's things that happen with friends. It's something that's so important. And it's not surprising that parents are like, we really need to go for this. What would you say are the top most important manners that every parent needs to teach their kids?
You know, that is a tricky question just because every child is different, and some have certain things that come easily to them, mm-hmm. and then other things that are hard. So for me, the most important manner for a family is the one that you need the most at the moment. But being more general, the first manner in the book for kids, I think, is the one that is a pain point for many parents, and it's wait for your turn to talk, yeah. which is about not interrupting. And I would say, I don't know a parent of a child who is young that doesn't struggle with that. So mm-hmm. I think start with that one. And then other things kind of go from there. Things like, you know, being a good friend at recess. You know, if your kid's in school, that's something that's important. The Modern Manners for the first volume of Modern Manners for Teens, the manner in there for me that is crucial for our teenagers to learn right away is that nothing online is private. If they can understand that technology manner, they will have a much easier time with technology, which is going to be forefront in their lives. But other things like, you know, to respect people's homes, sometimes teens will balk at that and think like, oh, that's just annoying. But actually, that gets you invited back to those places you want to go. Mm-hmm. There's a lot in it for them. And then in volume 2, I would say the one that really comes to mind for me is read the room. Mm-hmm. This is a little bit more of a mature manner, but one that can be very, very helpful from the time they're ready for it to adulthood. So those are 3 that I want to highlight. There's others that I feel are very personal and have had huge effects, and maybe we can talk about those later too.
So let's sort of dive in a little bit more, because I think I would imagine that people who are listening right now are like, okay, like then how am I going to do this? So let's start with your top manner of waiting for your turn to talk before, you know, blurting something out over other people, which is, you know, the common thing. I still remember a friend of mine said to me, this is a long time ago. She was one of the very first of all of us to have kids. And she was on the phone with me and she had told her son, like, you can't interrupt me while I'm on the phone. And then he came up with like a lot of interesting, innovative ways to interrupt her without using his voice. And, you know, it was so infuriating for her that, you know, you didn't understand that it's not just you interrupting by saying, mom, blah, 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 blah. It was also like whatever notes he was like holding up or like tapping her or like showing her dancing or whatever. It was so many things. It was comical. So let's say that is an issue for some people. Okay. I bet you. So what would be the way that we start teaching this to our kids?
So the manner, it kind of breaks down like what it looks like to wait for your turn to talk. And then, you know, giving them the option of saying like, excuse me, please. And, you know, if something's important. But I think one of my favorite parts of the Kids Manners book is on the back of each manner, there's a let's practice section. And this is where I feel like the real teaching gets done and making sure that your kids understand what it looks like to not interrupt. It's one thing to say, please stop interrupting me. But like you said, a young child doesn't really get what interrupting means. And so as you walk through the practice section, you give them opportunities to practice. The other thing that I love is that there is some nuance with every manner. So in general, yes, you don't interrupt your parent. But, you know, the last let's practice section says you're playing outside. Your mom is talking with your neighbor. You just saw your sister fall off her bike and she is hurt. Your mom didn't see it. That helps them understand there are times when interrupting is important and necessary. And I love the way it kind of gets a conversation started and allows them to think about it. Because I think as parents, when we teach in complete black and white, it leaves our children wondering, wait, so I can never interrupt? Or sometimes I can. And I want to make it more clear and begin a conversation. So if there's something that's going on in your family, let's say your child is getting ready for their soccer game and they don't know which color of uniform to wear, but you're on the phone with a parent, but they know they have to leave in 5 minutes, that's going to be a little trickier situation where they may need to hold that note up or do a little signal to get your attention so they can be ready when it's time to be ready.
And I feel like what you're saying is that it's important to go through some options and some examples with kids. So on my end, where we discuss how to talk to kids about these things, perhaps you'd be at the dinner table and you might bring up something like, hey, you know, earlier today, we, you know, a mom was on the phone and you were playing and you really wanted to show me what you had built with blocks. And when I was on the phone, I got frustrated with you because you tapped me and said, hey, I want to show you. Come over here. Come over here. What made you think that I had that reaction? Like, what can you think to yourself? What happened there? And have your child go back. And if they say, I don't know, you have to then be aware that your child is right at that learning spot where they really didn't understand. And you may have gotten frustrated with them. And I get that because that was me too. And you can say, look, I just want to apologize to you for getting so frustrated. Here's why I got frustrated. I was on the phone with somebody and they were telling me something that was important. And when you came over to me and told me you wanted to show me your blocks, I couldn't concentrate on what she was saying. So just like I want to listen to you when you're talking, I want to listen to Mrs. So-and-so when she's talking and give her my attention. So let's have a do-over, even if you're not actually doing it right then and there. And you can say to your child, let's say I'm on the phone and you want to show me your blocks. What would you do in that moment? Well, while I'm on the phone, you would wait and I could, and you can maybe tap me on the knee. And if I go like this, which is like put my finger up or I say, you know, have a signal with you and we can come up with one, then you'll know you have to wait till I'm done with my call unless it's an emergency. Does that make sense? Would that be like the type of conversation that we would need to have with our kids?
Yeah, I love that. I love bringing like a very real world example into the manners teaching. You can do it from a negative standpoint where you're trying to change a behavior. You can do it from a grateful standpoint where you're saying, hey, today I was on the phone and I knew you needed my attention and you were so great at waiting until I was finished with that phone call. You know, so I love the way that you can bring your very real day-to-day life into each manner. And that these are just jumping off questions. These are just a place to start. And then you can infuse your own personal values, your own family values into those conversations.
Yes, you and I are on the same page with all of that. It's how my entire book is written too. And I think it's really important that we leave room for interpretation because certain things may be more important to one parent than to another. And there is room for interpretation on understanding that then when you go to somebody else's house, things might be different. So how do we deal with talking to our kids about that? We're going to grandma's house and the rules are different, or you're going to a friend's house and you're not even sure what the rules are going to be around the dinner table or around that play date. How do you prepare them for somebody else's home and somebody else's rules and manners?
So this was another reason I wrote the book, because as a family, we are a more casual family overall.
Yeah.
We allow kids to go into the pantry and grab snacks for themselves. We are open with like someone laying on our couch. Mm-hmm. Like we're fairly relaxed. But actually, one of the reasons why I wrote this was because as my teens started to enter the homes of other people who had different expectations, I didn't want him to be seen as someone who wasn't welcome or wasn't polite or didn't understand how to interact well with that family. And so what I've found is my manners books give the most polite option. And then what I tell my kids is if someone says, hey, feel free to grab a snack anytime you want to, it's still polite to ask if they're there. But if they've told you before that you can go in and grab a snack, you're welcome to go in and grab a snack. But having the most polite option in their mind allows them to be someone that can easily adapt to any situation. When they have the least polite option in their mind, when they assume that people are fine with them opening the fridge, and then a dad comes down and says, what in the heck was your friend doing in our fridge? I'm not interested in him coming over. It doesn't look like he respects boundaries, those types of things. That can be a real issue that can affect our kids where they're no longer welcome or part of a circle or someone that always gets invited, you know, not because they're not a good kid, just because they didn't know. Mm-hmm. And so I really try to start with the most polite option and then relaxing that with more familiarity.
It's so interesting you bring that scenario up. I remember when somebody was at our house and their parents said to me later, my son was hungry at your house and your son didn't offer him a snack. And my son at the time was like, he was on a medication that made it so he was not hungry in the middle of the day at all. He ate a lot for breakfast and a lot for dinner, but nothing in between, not even on his radar. And so I had to teach him, like, you need to actually ask your guest if they're hungry, even though you're not. And I also needed to tell him, you can say to your friend, if you are hungry at any time, please go into our pantry and get what you want and show them, here's where the snacks are. It's like labeled snacks. Like there's no, you know, and because we're also a casual family when it comes to that. And I would not mind somebody doing that at all, that it was like, oh, okay. Like it wasn't on my radar to even teach that because come one, come all, like go eat my food, whatever. So we have to do the opposite side too and teach our kids to say, as the good host, you need to ask them, do you need anything to drink? Would you like something to eat? Not just when you're hungry or thirsty, but also somewhere in between because they might be and feel, you know, maybe awkward asking, right?
Yeah. And one of the one of the most important parts of these manners books is allowing our kids to get in front of awkward or tricky situations. Mm. And that was so important. So they felt equipped to do exactly what you just said, right? You were just equipping him to understand how to be a good host, what you might need to say, even if you're not hungry, those types of things. And I think the manner books spur those conversations. So before, you know, a tricky situation happens, or, you know, there's one about advocating for yourself at school. So if your teenager comes home and they are so mad because they ended up getting a C instead of a B, and they said, well, I should have just talked to my teacher. Well, we've already talked about advocating for yourself at school. You know, you can talk to your teacher about something that was not missing, that was marked missing, instead mm-hmm. of just accepting a grade, you know? So really getting our kids in front of that, helping them to have the confidence to be able to do the things because they know what the right action would be in a mm-hmm. situation like that before it comes up.
So important. Now, you brought up the idea, and we talked about being a good host. What about responding to compliments? It's funny. I was on Today's Show, on the Today Show, and this was a while back, this particular one, but we were talking about how women have trouble accepting compliments. And this happens, starts early on in our lives. Okay. So young girls and teen girls especially have trouble in this area. And they tend to push them off or say, no, that's not true, or then say something derogatory about themselves. I still remember Hoda saying to me, oh, so when, what do you want people to say when, you know, let's say I complimented your glasses? And I said something simple, like you could just say thank you, or you can go further and say, oh, thank you so much. I really like the color red. And she goes, oh no, that's too much. That's too much. And I was like, wow, this is really ingrained in us, so much so that the idea of even like highlighting something minor about whatever the person just complimented can feel really awkward. So what's your feeling about accepting manners, especially in this time when people may have some trouble in that area?
Yeah, I think it's tricky and something that I've really had to work on too. But I love your suggestion of just saying thank you. If you're someone that's not comfortable with it, just saying thank you. I think another thing, you know, if they compliment your shirt, you can say, oh, thanks so much. I just barely got it at Target. You know, you can follow it up with something like that. The other thing that I found that feels really comfortable to me is if someone says something kind to me, like, oh, I really love your shirt. Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate you noticing, you know, following it up with that. That was so kind of you to say something. And then reminding myself to be good at giving compliments also. Mm-hmm. I think when you're generous about giving compliments, sometimes it feels a little less awkward to accept them. Because you understand what someone is saying and the spirit that they're saying it in. And so thanking them for noticing. That was so nice of you to notice. That's so kind. That means so much to me that you said something so sweet about my son. If you want to follow it up with something like that.
Mm-hmm. And in that example, when somebody, if you're giving, you're modeling it in that case, and you're saying something like, thank you so much for saying something so sweet about your son, my son. Are you in agreement that you would be able to say something like complimentary on top of that? Like, I think he's a really good kid, or he really tries hard to make sure people feel included. Are you allowed to then put an extra thing on, or as it was said, is that just too much?
Yeah, I don't think that's too much. I appreciate when other people recognize the goodness in themselves and the people around them. And I, for me, if that turns someone off, I don't think it's going to turn someone off who was already getting a compliment. Mm-hmm. Now, out of the blue, it might bother somebody if you walked up to somebody and said, my child is so kind. But when they said, wow, you know, like, your son is so kind, thank you. Or something like, we really enjoy that trait about him.
Yeah.
That has really helped our family. His kindness has been a great example to his brothers, you know, something like that. Sometimes I think people get a little bit worried that they're going to say, well, my life's the best and nothing ever goes wrong. And we're so lucky, you know,
yes.
But I think there's great ways to be sensitive, but also to take that compliment.
Right. I mean, you're not putting somebody else down and you're not saying, you know, my kid is better than yours, or, you know, you're not teaching your kid to do any type of comparison at all. In fact, you're just having them own the compliment. And I think that that's good. What about the kid who is in a habit of putting themselves down, especially when they're being complimented? Somebody is like, oh, wow, you're such a fast runner, or you do so well on the basketball court, or I saw you, you know, in the play, and I thought you did such a great job singing. And they automatically start saying, well, I'm not as good as so-and-so, or my voice cracked, or you can't be serious, I suck. What do you do to kind of retrain that child to accept the compliment and at the very least stop berating themselves?
Yeah, I think that's really important. And I will just go back to the suggestion that you gave, is just challenging your child to just say thank you. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not going to go from saying, whatever, I'm the worst, to, yes, I've been working really hard at getting faster. You know, that's probably not the jump they're going to make. Mm-hmm. But being able to just say, thanks so much, and leave it at that. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes they think they have to say too many things, and letting them know that if somebody tells them they had a great game, saying thank you. And if it was someone that they were playing with, they can say, thanks, you played great too. You know, mm-hmm. sometimes that is helpful. Or, right. Or if it was an adult and their child was also in the play, they could say, thanks so much. You know, Jane did an amazing job on her solo. And sometimes that can help deflect. Sometimes it's just, they're not comfortable with so much energy on them. So just being able to deflect that and also be kind in the process.
That's such a good explanation and suggestion to share it, to share the compliment, mm-hmm. so that it doesn't feel like you're on the spotlight. And that often is a lot of that issue. So let's focus a little bit more on the teens, since that's where you began. And there are some interesting areas that in the teen world that maybe we don't get quite as much into with the younger kids, although some. One of them my son was recently in, which is the group project. I can't stand group projects. I often think they are just the worst, because you come upon this issue so often of things being profoundly uneven in terms of effort and work, and then shared responsibility, especially if your partner or your other people in your group are not interested. So how do we talk to our kids about doing their part in group projects, or even when they're home, doing their part to be part of the family and being assisted, and being an assistant or helping without needing to be constantly nagged?
Yeah, that was that manner was an important one, the do your part manner.
Yeah.
Because I think in the teenage years, there is a propensity for a large group of them to do as little as possible.
And for sure,
that can be really tricky on the few who don't feel the same. And so I love the reminder to do your part for the kids who are struggling with realizing that what they do matters. And, you know, really with these manners books, it's helping them understand that they don't exist in a vacuum. This is not just about them. They're not walking through the world with a little bubble where what they do doesn't affect anyone. And so understanding that manner, but it's also a great prep for life, because we've all been employees where others are not doing their part. And, you know, on the flip side of this manner, helping them understand that, yes, you will all be responsible for the grade that comes. So if it matters to you because you care about an A, and your friend only cares about a C, he's going to do a C amount of work. If you want the A, you will probably have to make up from his C to an A. And is that fair? No. Is that life? Yes. You can also say, I don't want to do more work, I'm only going to do my amount of work. So we will probably land somewhere in the B range. And if I'm not okay with that, then I've got to do more. But it's such, you know, I also hate group projects, but they are also an incredible learning experience because life is a group project from the time you're little to the time you go. You know, you're going to be in a home where, or have a roommate or something like that, where getting the dishes done right away does not matter to them. So if it matters to you, you're probably going to be the one that does the dishes more often than the one who doesn't care about it. But if everyone can get in their mind, do your part from a young age, perhaps that person will give a little more effort to get the dishes done because it matters to someone else too.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting. And you know, you can start that kind of thing early and helping kids to understand that that what you do, as you said, matters and it does affect other people. So if you can imagine that when you don't do your part, you're sort of splashing mud on somebody else. And when you do do your part, you know, you're shining up the car, right? You're helping and it makes things, you know, really pleasant for everyone. And sometimes you need more of a concrete example to help kids understand that when you're doing a group project and you're in charge of doing, you know, the back half of the car and they're in charge of doing, you know, cleaning off the front half and you're going to do the work and they're not, or vice versa. You know, that does make a difference to the overall appearance of things, the overall reception of the things. And what does that say to the child or to the teenager about what needs to be done? But your point about it being life is so true. And that is something that we needed to talk about because it's been a lot of frustration. What about when you're talking about rude language? That's certainly something that is happening earlier and earlier. Some people feel, you know, their kid can speak in any which way at home, as long as they don't say it out in public. How do you curb the rude language, which certainly can be received poorly by a large number of people and then get them not invited back again?
Yeah. That's, I think that's the manner. Watch your language. And then it talks about understanding your audience, you know, who is there? Are there young kids? Are there older people? You know, and being very sensitive to what that looks like and how that sounds to other people. It was interesting. I was at a shop with my mother-in-law and the person running the cashier said he was just using all this slang that she didn't understand. And I even thought it's not even always about something that's completely not okay, but just, does your language match the situation? You're not going to call your teacher bro, right? Understanding what is respectful in a situation and how far that can get you. There's no quicker way to not be invited back than to say things that are totally inappropriate around people's younger siblings. A parent would not feel safe with a teenager coming over that was going to expose younger kids to things that she's not ready for them to be exposed to. And I think with the manners, especially for teens, one of the things that was important to me on the back of each manner was helping them understand what's in this for you. Because why does it matter? A teenager understands, well, my old mom doesn't want me using this much better, cooler, you know, language. But when they hear this girl that I'm dating, her parents are not going to want me around if they hear me speaking like this. That flips it in their mind from, this is just what my mom wants me to do, to this could be a hindrance to me living a life that I enjoy. And so that's why it was really important in the teen books for me to say, what's in it for you? Because while we would love for everyone to be motivated by something higher, the best way to motivate a teenager is to help them understand what matters to them.
So let's do one more because it's just one that I get asked about so very much. And having a 13 and a 14-year-old is something that I experience a lot as well. And I'm going to say it's screen use you know, to the hilt, like what, mm-hmm. and while they're with other people, while you're driving in the car, not they're driving, while right. you're driving in the car and they're next to you, while they're at a table, I've seen that. Or my mother said to me the other day, and she's 79, she said she was out to dinner with somebody and one of the people that she was out to dinner with, it was like two more people. One of them was scrolling on their phone constantly and just so frustrated with like how somebody could do that. So I'm just saying it's not just the kids or the teens. Okay. Yeah. So we're saying that this is all over the place. So how can we help kids to understand that manner, especially when they're seeing tons of examples of people doing it all over the place anyway, in the movie theater? My son's even talked to me about that. Like this guy was like on his phone in the middle of the movie theater. I could hear this and that on the airplane. They're using it and it's out loud. The stewardess had to go over to somebody the other day when I was on, because I'm touring for my book, and they're like, you can't have that out loud, sir. So what's your view on this, and how can we help people to understand that manner?
Yeah, I mean, I have quite a few technology manners, but one of them is that your phone should be silent. If you are in a group of people, if you are not at your house by yourself in your room or something, your phone should be silent, or you should have AirPods in. There is no reason, and people will come at me with 1 million exceptions to the rule, and I still can't get behind any of them, that there is a need for you to have your phone out loud, whether you're on FaceTime, watching a movie, you know, scrolling Instagram, whatever it is, it should not be out loud. If you forgot your headphones, you have to wait. And that's just part of life, you know? But then there's others, things like nothing online is private, but one of them that is so important to me is to be present.
Yeah.
The manner says the people that are physically with you are more important than what is on your screen.
Yes.
And there's, you know, a million pages of research that we can share with our kids, but I think it's just as effective to say, how do you feel when you are with a friend and you are excited to connect with that friend, or you are with a parent, or you are with a grandparent, you know, and they choose their phone over being with you? How do you feel? And they will say right away, like, that's not fun. It feels like they don't care about me. You can ask again, do you feel motivated to have a relationship with a person who chooses their phone over you? No. Do you feel like you would like to invite the person who's going to be on their phone the whole time you're hanging out to go do something really fun? No. You know, and so helping them understand, everyone has an easier time seeing the problem when it's being done to them than when they're doing it to someone else, but helping them understand, and I get it, you know, it's 2024, phones and technology are a very big part of our life, and it takes extreme amounts of discipline. But what I've seen, I've got older kids that are past the teenage years even, is the people that can figure out how to have real relationships as young as possible are the ones who end up enjoying life the most. And those who decide to sit on a phone and watch someone else live their life instead of living their own are the ones who end up being the most miserable. So it's worth the work. It's worth the discipline. It's worth the effort of a parent to model something that feels like in-person, real-life connection. And I think we should advocate that for as much as possible.
I agree with that. Connection is the way to be fulfilled. It is the route to happiness and health and wellness. And we know that from the studies that people who feel connected to the people who are closest to them are those who are going to live the best lives. Give us your top tip. What is something that you want people to come away with after listening to you on this podcast or reading your books?
I think what I want people to understand is that they can help their children create successful lives. I think right now there's a lot of hopelessness about, you know, where is this generation going? You know, these problems, this problem. And really, these books are empowering for parents to be able to have a little roadmap that doesn't take a lot of effort. I was very cognizant of that. We don't need one more hard lift. These are easy. But then our kids really want to be successful. They're just not always sure how to do it. Mm. And these tips can help them have successful relationships, be successful in school, and most of all, feel good about who they are from the inside out.
And you don't have to do it all at once. You can do it little by little. As I often say, this is not one big talk, but a series of little ones. And you've got a lot of days. So give us your resource of the week. Where can we go to get more information about you, your books, and the work you're doing?
We have a really active Instagram community that I absolutely love at Brooke Romney Writes. And then the books are all available on Amazon and often 10% off. So watch for that.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on our show today. I think this was such a great talk and such an important area of exploration. I just appreciate your insights and all that you've come with to help us understand the importance of manners, how we can talk to our kids about them, and how we can go about it starting right now. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Robin. I love the insights you brought to the table and the questions were fantastic. So thanks for what you're doing for parents today.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I've got my takeaways and sweet friends, I know you have yours. So let's discuss them. You can go up to Facebook, to the Dr. Robin Silverman page. We can chat about it at drrobinsilverman.com. On Twitter, which is now X, under Dr. Robin, Instagram, Dr. Robin Silverman. I'm going to be going back and forth with Brooke all week long, talking about these manners and highlighting some of the wonderful things that she said, putting them on memes so that you can share them with others. She had some whammies today that I thought, oh, wow, put that on a meme. Let's get that out to everybody. And I guess it will get people talking among your friend group. You can come up to our Instagrams. We'll be going back and forth. As I said, you can ask questions and hopefully we can get some really good answers and discussion. And if you love this podcast like I did, I hope you'll go up to iTunes and rate and review it. Those 5-star reviews mean so much. They really help. It's not just, hey, Dr. Robin, we think you're awesome. It's not just that, although, hey, that's nice. And I would read that. But that having those 5-star reviews helps the algorithm to see the podcast as important and gets the information out from Brooke Romney to everybody else so that they can hear what she has to say and join her Instagram. All those good things happen. I truly appreciate it. And while we're on the subject of reviews, hey, could you review our books? We would so appreciate that. Mine, How to Talk to Kids About Anything. I'm still on tour. You can look for Brooke's. Give all the information about Brooke and how wonderful she is and how these manners are important to you. Those 5-star reviews really mean a lot. That's all we have for today, my fellow parents, leaders, and educators. Thank you so much for tuning in to How to Talk to Kids About Anything. For more information on books, articles, speaking engagements, or curriculum, you can go to drrobinsilverman.com. There are so many great podcasts up there, and the show notes to this podcast will be up there as well. I look forward to weathering the storm and enjoying the sunny side of life together. And please remember, even on the days when you fall short, you've got this. You're here. You're getting the information you need. I know it's not easy, but never forget, there's often a tomorrow. And if you thought to yourself sometime, oh my goodness, I haven't taught that manner. I didn't even touch on that. Oh, the last time she did that, I just looked the other way. Hey, parenting provides the ultimate do-over. I see you and I'm right there with you. And as there are moments when we doubt our know-how, our choices, and our sweet sanity, please know you are 10 times the parent you think you are. Until next time, this is Dr. Robin Silverman with How to Talk to Kids About Anything. Please tune in again and keep connecting through conversation. See you next week.
You've been listening to How to Talk to Kids About Anything with Dr. Robin Silverman. For more information on books, articles, speaking engagements, or curriculum, please visit drrobinsilverman.com.